Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Psachim Daf Mem Beis. Don't forget to click on the daf option in order to view a marked daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin our shiur 11 lines from the top of daf Mem Beis. At the beginning of the line, there is a quote from the Mishnah, Mei tashmisho shel nachtoim, and the Mishnah went on to say, Yishbechu mipnei shehein machmitzim. We saw on Daf Mem Amud Beis, our Mishnah, that said water that's used by a baker that he uses to cool off his hands as he is shaping his loaves. He's shaping matzah loaves. And while he's doing that, he's also he has to cool off his hands so that it's more appropriate as far as fermentation considerations for his continued work with the dough. But now that water has an effect that has dough particles or flour particles sitting in there as he is immersing his hands all the time in that water. So what do you do with that water? So Tony Chada, one source says, Shoifchin b'mokoim midron vein, Shoifchin b'mokoim hishboirin. You are to pour them out. And a midron, midron is an incline where the water will flow away, flow downwards and away, and you'll be rid of it that way. And do not pour it into an ishboren. Ishboren literally is from the word shever, where the ground is cracked. Oftentimes the word ishboren can mean a pool. It's a place where water accumulates. So don't pour it into a place that the water will accumulate. Of course, you have water that has a chometz problem attached to it, so you don't want it staying around. V'tanyo idach shoifchin b'mokom ishboren. Another source says that you are able to pour it into an ishboren. Is there not a contradiction? Lo kashya, there is no question, no problem here. Hod nefishi dekovu. Nefishi means a lot. In other words, if you have a large quantity of water relative to the size of the crack, so it will kovu means it will gather together, like the word mikveh. Mikveh is a reference to waters that are gathered, that are stagnant and in one spot. So if you have a lot of this mei tashmishel nachtoim, so it will gather, and therefore it will remain there. Ha delo nefishi, delo kovu. If you don't have a lot of water, so you can pour it into the ishbor, and that was source number two, very simply because it will become absorbed in the ground relatively quickly. So there's no fear of it remaining around. Omar of Yehuda, Isha lo tolush b'mayim, elo b'mayim shelonu. The topic heading that we have for this piece of Gemara is Limona mehachonas hamatzos b'chom. We want to avoid the preparation of matzos in an heated environment. We speak about heated environment. Not only does it mean in a place that is hot, but also the water that one uses to knead to prepare the dough should not be hot water. So Rav Yehuda says, announced the following, or Rav Yehuda says a halacha. He says a woman should not need water. Elo b'mayim shelonu. Now this word shelonu we cannot translate at this point. Dorsha Rav Matona b'Papunya. Rav Matona held forth a public lecture in the town of Papunya. Now Rashi points out something that seems to me as very interesting, and he says that ubaloshin hakodesh hoyu dorshin. The public Torah lectures were in Hebrew. We often have this impression that when you're learning the Gemara at that time period that all the speech was in Aramaic. But this Rashi seems to suggest something otherwise. And by the way, there is another reference in Shas to this phenomenon of the rabbi who would say the drosha in Hebrew, and there was a meturgamon, someone who would say it over to the to public ears in Aramaic. However, in this case, the public themselves are hearing that this expression that One, a woman should not need the dough. Elo b'mayim shelonu. Now, in simple Hebrew, mayim shelonu means our water. Mayim shelonu, our water. So, Rav Matona said over this phrase, isha lo tolush ela b'mayim shelonu. And you know what happened? The next day in Papunya, lamochar, the next day, Aisuku almo chatzvayu, the Osula Gabe, the next day they all brought their chatzvayu, their receptacles, their jars, their pitchers, and they came to Lugabe, to Rav Matona, the Omru Le, and they said to him, Hav Lon Maya, give us water. After all, yesterday you said that matzahs cannot be prepared with any water other than Shelanu, other than our water. So you've got the water, give it to us. Omar Lahu, Rav Matona said, you didn't understand what I said. Ano b'maya de bisu, Amri. Now the word shelanu can also come, it also means mayim shelanu. Lanu means from the word lino, is water that stayed overnight. During the spring season, when of course Pesach falls out, the wells, the sources of water, are said to be hot. And Rashi gives a little more background to that, but the water, relatively speaking, is warmer during that particular season. So, in order to compensate for the heat, the practice is to draw the water the day before and leave it in vessels overnight, so that it's not in the ground absorbing the heat that we just mentioned, but it's cooling off in the vessels, and that will be accomplished if you leave it overnight. So what Rav Yehuda had said, and Rav Matona said it in Papunya, you only water that stayed overnight is suitable, because that way it's cooled off. And that's what we just read in Aramaic. He says, I said, b'mayo, water, debisu. Debisu means, from the word bas in Aramaic, means to sleep over, to stay overnight. So it's water that literally that slept overnight in vessels. That kind of water is appropriate. The Gemara continues, Dorash Rovo, Isha lo tolush bechamo, velo bechame chamo, velo bemayim hagufa min amoliar. And velo tagbia yodo min atanur ad shetigmor es kol hapas. He mentions four things that one who's kneading the dough should be aware of. Most commonly, women prepared the matzahs, prepared the baked goods for Pesach. So he says a woman should not knead the dough. Bechama means in the sun. That was the first point. The second point, v'lo bechame chama, nor with water heated up in the sun. V'lo b'mayim hagrufim min ha-moliar. Moliar is a vessel used for heating water. They both heated the water up in the moliar, and even when there was no actual fire, the thickness of the moliar's walls, metallic walls, were such that the heat would be maintained for a long time. So this is a reference to water that's left over in a moliar. The person should not use those waters for kneading the matzahs. And once again, this is all a function of the fact that the heat environment will hasten the leavening process. V'lo sagbia yodo min atanur ad shetigmor es kol hapas. That Rashi explains this, klomar, without translating it, he says, tehei oisekis bebotzek kol shav. That means that she should, when she's preparing dough, she should not leave it sitting, but she should be constantly involved with it, whether it's kneading it or shaping it, and of course putting it into the oven, not leaving it alone. Utsricha shnei kelim. Another point he makes is that she needs two vessels, echot shemekatefes bo, v'echot shemetzanenes bo es yodeha. One vessel will hold water that she'll use for shaping the loaves, the bread, the matzahs, and another vessel that will hold water that she cools her hands off in that water. Rashi explains that the vessel that she was dipping her hands in for shaping the dough, that water is heated up through the warmth of her hands, and therefore you need another vessel of water in which she can cool off her hands. Ibayalaho ovro velosha mahu. What's the din if she kneaded dough with the warm water? Marzutra mar muter, Rav Ashi omar oser. So we see a machlokes amoroyim as to what the din is. Omar marzutra, mino amino law. From where do I know the ruling of leniency? Desanya, we have a source in which it says, ein loisesin hasseorim bepesach. One should not soak barley on Pesach in anticipation of that easing the skin removal of the kernels of barley. The im losas, if a person did soak the grains, and of course when we speak about not soaking, it's all because of the fear that things will become chomei. So it says in the same source that if he did it, nispaku asurim lo nispaku mutorin. If the grains split, that's a sign that they are fermenting, so they're usur, but if they remained complete, intact, then they are mutter. Even though the beginning of this source said, do not soak the grains. So that even though there was a warning not to do it, post facto, if it was done, it could very well be mutter. So Marzutra reasoned the same thing that we were taught before, do not knead in hot water, but if you see that the dough did not turn into chometz, so it should be mutter. V'Ravashi, his response is, otu, V'Ravashi Omar, otu kulhu chado mechiso mechisinhu. Are all halachas woven together in one web work? That means, just because, well, as the Gemara itself says, hecha di itmar, itmar, where you have an explicit statement, like we see by the soaking, where it starts off saying not to do it, but it could be mutter. So fine, there we can be lenient. V'hecha dolo itmar, but in the case of Avra v'losha b'chamin, where you don't have a source, a Tanaic source, saying that, that if you did it, it will be mutter, and you want to say it on your own by virtue of comparing it to the halacha of lesisa, well, Rav Ashi says you can't compare one topic to the other. Where it says so explicitly, then so be it. But if it doesn't say so explicitly, we are not going to be lenient. Well, as you can see, that ends the second perek of Psachim, and with that we begin the third perek. V'elu ovrim b'pesach. The following, and the Mishnah now gives a list of items that will result in a person being in violation of the negative command of the Chumash, of the Torah, of Bal Yiroh u'Bal Yemotzeh. There are two lavim that express the idea that you should not be in possession of Chometz during Pesach, and they are Lo Yiroh Elecha and Lo Yemotzeh Bevoteichem. You should not have in your possession Chometz. The Mishnah's list will be explained later in the Gemara. Now, they include the following. Kusach ha-Bavli, v'shechor ha-Modai, v'chometz ha-Adomi, v'zeisum ha-Mitzri, v'zoymen shel Tzaboyim, v'amilon shel Tabochin, v'koylon shel Sofrim. As we said, and Rashi himself says that these will be explained in the Gemara. Rabbi Lezer Omer, af tachshitei noshim. Even tachshitei noshim, and that too the Gemara will explain. Ze ha-Klau. Kolshu mimin dogon. The rule is that anything that has as its basis something that originates in a grain, hareza over bepesach, that will result in a pesach violation. Hare elu ba'azhora ve'en bohen mishum koreis. If one eats these things, he will be in violation of the negative command, and that could result in lashings. However, they do not result in koreis, in the severe punishment of Kores, and this too will be explained in the Gemara. We'll need sources for these things. So we've left the Mishnah a bit vague, we understand that, but that's the job of the Gemara to clarify. As you can see, we have a diamond marking that appears, and on the side of the Gemara there are no say mivne heading. We have an explanation that these diamonds represent rishimos shel mozon vashpa'osam al adam. We're going to see lists of different foods and their influence on people. Now, the immediate tie-in between this Gemara and the Mishnah, you can see immediately in the first Tanaic source, the item number, the item that is featured is the Kusa Chabavli, which was the first item mentioned in the Mishnah as resulting in someone being over by Yoruba by Yemotze. So we are getting a bit off the topic now, but we tried to show the tie-in. Tanu Rabbanan, Shlosh Dvarim Nemorim B'Kusa Chabavli. There are three things that are said about the dish, the food called Kusa Chabavli. We can tell you ahead of time that it's a dish, it's primarily a dip that's made of sour milk and bread that is left to ferment a long time. So this food item called Kusa Chabavli, which, as I say, people use primarily as a dip, Metamtei Mesalev, the word Metamtei is, in Rashi's words, Loshon Stimo, it seals up one's heart. It makes a person lose his ability to think, we'll say, rationally or clearly or decisively. It seals up his heart. Umesames Enayim, and it is capable of causing blindness. And umakrish es haguf, and it can weaken a person. And the Gemara goes over each one of these points. Metamtem es halev, mishum nisyubi dechalbo. It causes a person to lose his ability to think clearly because it has in it nisyubi dechalbo. Nisyubi dechalbo is associated with a certain part of the milk that is separated from the milk when making cheese. And Rashi uses a French word. On a lighter side, it says in Rashi the word is mishige. Sounds a little bit like mishugene, which has some relationship to metamtem es halev. But that's on a bit of a light note. Don't take that too seriously. But there is some effect that this nisyubi dechalba ingredient or element that's found in the milk that causes this to happen. So as we said, it has to do with the a certain aspect of that which gets separated from milk when you let it sit for a while. And number two, umesame es hoinayim mishum milcha. It contains salt, and Rashi points out it's melech stoimis. This is Dead Sea salt that is capable of rendering a person blind. And the third point, umakrish es haguf, it causes weakness, and he says mishum Kumniso de uma, and that is the bread. Rashi says paschim is apesh lachar's man besocha kusach. This is, as we said, the milk is left to sit with bread in it for a long time, so the bread also becomes moldy or spoilt in the course of time. But that's how this dish is made, and that causes physical weakness. At this point, you're probably asking, why would anyone want to eat Kusa Chabavli? But that's beyond the purview of our shiur. Tanu Rabbanan, Shlosh Dvarim Marbin Hazevel. There are three things that increase human waste. V'koyfefin es hakoyma, literally bend, cause a person to get bent over. But Rashi says matishin kochel, they cause him weakening. V'notlin echad michomesh meois mimor einov shel adam, and reduce a person's eyesight by 1/500th. Now, what are the three things? Pas kevar, v'shechar chodosh, v'yerek chai. Pas kevar is an expression we've seen in recent apim. This has to do with bread prepared from flour that's not pure. It has other grain debris in it mixed in. That's pas kevar. Shechar chodosh is beer that hasn't been left to ferment for enough time or for a long time. And Yerek Chai, Rashi says, now first we translate it literally, Yerek Chai, there's another Girsa that doesn't have the word Chai, it just has the word Yerek. So this is in the realm of vegetables, but we're talking about uncooked vegetables. But now Rashi specifies Kagoin, included in Yerek Chai, Kagoin Kreshin Ubitzolim V'chizrin Kishoichomen Harbei Tomid. So that if you know how to translate creation, Bitsolim, and Chizrin, Bitsolim, is something that we will take a risk and translate. That would have to do with onions, kreshen and chizron, other kinds of vegetables. There are translations available, but in Gemara markings, we hesitate to translate those items that we don't have a very strong tradition on what they are. So those items, if one eats a large quantity and regularly, they can cause what this source described. Tanu Rabbanan, we continue second line from the bottom of the Gemara, another list. Shlosh Dvarim, there are three things, and you can see they're listed off at the end of the source, that are Mematinis HaZevel. They actually have the opposite. They maybe can be viewed as an antidote, but they at least have an opposite effect from that previous list. They are Mematinis HaZevel. They reduce the amount of waste. The Zoykfinis HaKoyma, they straighten a person out, maybe increase strength. Umi'irin Eswainayim, and increase eyesight. Eluhain, and they are Pasnekiyah, Boser Shomain, V'yayin Yoshan. The bread made from fine or clean flour, meat, that rich meat or fatty meat. I don't know what the cardiologist would have to say about that, but V'yayin Yoshan and aged wine. One should bear in mind, though, that here the Gemara is listing off these food items and the accompanying value that they have. If I'm entitled to call a personal opinion to insert over here, one has to take into consideration when coming to conclusions from these things, assuming that they are what they are and that there isn't some type of additional deep meaning to these things, which could very well be. But if you take things at face value, bear in mind all kinds of other issues called, including lifestyle, mobility as opposed to sedentary lifestyles, and environmental considerations, pollution, fertilizers, and a whole host of other things that have to be factored in when one is discussing the food and food benefit and body effects. So that here, if we take, for example, fatty meat, well, certainly today people will tell you that fatty meat is unhealthy, but couple that with the fact that people lead a very sedentary lifestyle and all kinds of additives that are found in meat could result in something different than what you see here in the Gemara. But my diversion here is basically to preserve the significance and the, almost we'll call it, the sanctity of the words of the Gemara, and don't fall into the common trap of questioning the Gemara based on evidence that we have in front of us without looking into things much deeper. The Gemara continues. Pas Nikia. In the source it said Pas Nikia has the 3 points of nutritional value. Well, that's Desmida. It's Pas Nikia made from Solas, as Rashi says. Smida is Solas. Solas is a form of flour, and here we're associating the pastiki with soles bread. In modern Hebrew, the term soles is similar to what people might see marketed in stores as farina. Bosar shamein is the tzfirta delo iftach. It's a reference to specifically to a goat that hasn't given birth yet. So a female goat that hasn't given birth yet. The fatty meat of the boser, the rich meat of that kind of animal, is beneficial. Yayin yoshon atik atiki literally means very old, but it means it's been aged 3 years. Kol mili de mali lahai koshe lahai ude koshe lahai mali lahai. In all areas, all kinds of things that are viewed as having therapeutic value, so they might be beneficial for this particular ailment, but for another ailment, that very item could be injurious. And Rashi gives examples of that, certain foods or items of therapeutic value that are good for the lave are bad for the eyes, etc. And the Gemara goes on and says that is a general rule. bar mi zangvila retiva upilpuli arichta upas nekiyo boser shomim v'ayin yoshan. There are five items that the Gemara lists off that are demali lekuli gufe. They are good for the entire body. So some of the things we are not going to translate. The first one, zangvila retiva. Retiva is something that's fresh. Rashi has a French word that sounds very similar to what we might say in English is ginger. So if you want to make that assumption, so then you would have something here called fresh ginger. Pilpili arichta are long pilpili. Pilpili as well is something that's hard to translate, because in modern Hebrew the word pilpil is associated with a pepper, but a garden pepper, a green pepper. However, it's often something that in terms of the Gemara it could very well be referenced to the pepper spice that essentially grows on trees, like peppercorns. Here we're talking about an elongated pilpel. Pasnikia, we mentioned before, that has to do with bread made from soles, from clean soles. And boser shomein, we describe, as well as yayin yoshan. All of these are mali lekule gufei. Shechar hamodai. Now, this goes back to the Mishnah. What is shechar hamodai? The ramu bei mei sari. That it's used, it's made, this type of beer is made with barley as its base. Rashi points out, interestingly, that at the time of the Gemara, the common beer was date beer. However, in Modai, they made a barley-based beer, which, as Rashi says, is similar to our beer. And Rashi, bear in mind, lived approximately 1,000 years ago from the time that we are making this recording. But yet in Rashi's time, the common beer was in fact a barley-based beer. However, in the Gemara's time, which predated Rashi by a good 500-600 years, that the beer that was common was date beer. However, in the Modai, which is a region, geographic area, country, they made their beer using barley. Hence, it's not called just Shechar, but Shechar HaModai. And the Gemara explains that there barley was used in its manufacture. The Chometz HaAdomi, Chometz is vinegar. Chometz HaAdomi, it's Deshadu Bei Sairi. This is a reference to vinegar, which is produced from wine, and in order to cause the wine to ferment, they would add barley to it. Now, barley, of course, is one of the five grains that can become chometz, so that's why the Mishnah mentions these items, these food-related items, as being problematic with regard to the realm of chometz. we say realm of chometz and not actual chometz, because for real super-duper chometz, there's also a kores penalty, and the items mentioned in the Mishnah do not carry with them a kores penalty. We'll have to see a little more about that later. But it will subject someone to lashing, so that it's a serious matter in and of itself. The Gemara continues, and we have a comment of Rav Nachman, and you notice we used a long marking for this. Omar Rav Nachman. Betchila, at the time of the Beis HaMikdash, and we've used a double underline here to highlight the different time periods. Betchila, k'shoy mevi'im nesachim Yehuda, and the time of Beis HaMikdash, when they bring the nesachim is wine used for pouring on the Mizbeach, lo hoya yenom shel Yehuda machmitz. The wine was of such high quality that it would not ferment ad shenoistim l'sochem soirin, until they would add barley to it. Vayukurin oso chometz stam, and that was chometz. That was what we call vinegar, and they used the simple word chometz to refer to that. The achshav nowadays ein yenom shel adomim machmitz. Here the nation changed. Before we were focusing on Yehuda, and here we focus on Edom. Edom is a country that's associated with the descendants of Esav, and the descendants of Esav are also understood to be a reference to the Romans. And the Romans essentially are the, we'll call the predecessors of the Christian world. So nowadays that the Beis Hamikdash is destroyed, the Edomites and all that that refers to, as we just explained, their wine does not ferment. Ad shenoisin l'sechem sorin v'koren oso chometz ha'edomi. In other words, it's what we originally referred to as basic chometz. Things have changed, things have flipped around, and now the Edomites are on top, so to speak, and their wine remains high quality and doesn't go bad until you add sorin to it. So that is what the Mishnah is referring to, wine that was, or vinegar that was produced from wine that has barley added to it. Now this flip around from Yehuda, which is the Jewish people, to the Edomites, is a fulfillment of that which it says in the Psukim, L'kayim HaShenemar, Imol'o HaCharavo. And we darshan that, that to mean, Im Maleozu Harevozu, Im Leozu Harevozu. Paraphrasing the Gemara, if one is on top, the other is on the bottom. In other words, you will not have both, you won't have Edom and Yehuda both riding high or both on the bottom. It's seesaw. When one is up, the other is down. Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, you can see we call him number two, Omar Mehocha. This concept of Yehuda and Edom seesawing is reflected or hinted to in this pasuk, Ula'oim mila'oim ye'emotz. This pasuk is a reference to Rivka having two children, one Esav and one Yankiv. So Rashi says, Ula'oim mila'oim ye'emotz, kishe Esav gibor Yaakov cholosh. When Esav, and again, Esav represents the Edomites, and we said their descendants are the Romans and the Christian world, when he is strong, Yankiv Cholosh. So the Jewish people are weak. They are subsidiary. Ein Malchus Shneim Miskayim Yachad. The idea of a leadership or superpower cannot have both of them at the same level on high. So one is on top and the other one is below. There were times, in fact, in Jewish history, for example, when King Solomon was the king, he was the recognized leading world power. So that the idea of the Jewish people having a world preeminence in this sense actually did exist. But it doesn't, if you look carefully at the Psukim in Sefer Bereishis, you see that the that Esav was given a blessing that in the event that Yankiv, that the Jewish people cast off their yoke of Torah u'mitzvahs, so that is when Esav will rise to be on top. So the phenomenon of the Jewish people being under the thumb, under the rule of other powers that who trace their origins back to Edom is of no surprise. But of course, we are hopeful of an ultimate redemption where things will change. The Gemara continues with a topic heading. We have a tat nosei, a sub-topic heading. Ayim temed boi hafrosha. We'll see a reference to a substance called temed. Temed is related to wine. It's produced from adding water to grape lees and letting it sit and ferment. It also becomes a type of beverage. And in our introductory note here, we're referring to the, is there a need to tithe from temed? So let us read the Gemara. You'll notice that we have a diamond aleph, and that will be because of a question that will come up regarding Shitas Rabbi Yehuda and the issue of tithing as a result of a second Tanaic source reflecting his opinion, and the Gemara will have to resolve them. So the first source, Tanya, Omar Rebbe Yehuda. Be Yehuda, Yehuda means in the Yehuda region of the land of Israel. Israel was divided into a couple of regions. You had Yehuda, the southern half, the southern part of the country, Goliel, the northern part, and there's other geographic areas, but not for now. So Rebbe Yehuda says, Be Yehuda, Barishona, at the in the early days, Halokech Choymetz Me'am Oretz, Eino Tzorch La'aser. If one buys vinegar from an Amoretz was a reference to people that were uninformed or ignorant and didn't practice halachas in some part of them, a minority, but a significant minority of these Amoratzim did not practice the laws of tithing properly. So at the outset, when you bought chometz from an Amoretz, you did not need to tithe it, because there was an assumption made that it came from temed. Rashi says temed, and he gives a French word. Their wine was good, and leaving the wine aside wouldn't turn it into vinegar. It didn't ferment. Therefore, the manufacture of vinegar in their days came from the residue of the wine, which would be set aside to ferment. And as far as Amoratzim, they would not hesitate with regard to the laws of tithing to deal with it properly. We'll get into more detail as we go on. The achshav, nowadays, halokeh chometz me'am oretz, tzorch la'aser, nowadays when you buy vinegar from an amoretz, you have to tithe, shechizkoso eino ba'alim en ayayin. Nowadays, the vinegar is made from wine itself. So, as far as the purchase from amoretz, you will have to tithe. So, the impression that one gets in reading this source is that temed does not need to be tithed, but wine does. Well, we're not going to question wine. Wine certainly needs to be tithed. After a person harvests his grapes and makes wine, he has to tithe from that. The issue right now is our focus is on the temed. So the Gemara asks, V'sova Rav Yehuda temed lav bar esurihu? Is Rav Yehuda really of the opinion that you don't need to tithe from temed? V'hotnan, hametame v'nosan mayim b'mida, u'motso kedei mida so poter. If a person is making the temed drink, and he has, let's say, he pours 3 cups of water into the temed, into the grape debris, and after a while he draws from that 3 cups of liquid, so he will be exempt because we say that he poured in water and he got out water. There's no additional substance there, and therefore there's no need for tithing because you don't tithe from water. You might say, well, there's like a color change or there's a slight taste change. So the Tanakhama does not view that as reflecting anything of any significance. However, Rabbi Yehuda Mechayev, now here our emphasis is on Shitas Rabbi Yehuda. He says you judge the substance based on its color. So it's true you put 3 cups of clear water in, but what you're drawing off has a wine color to it. And based on, as Rashi says, Bosur Chazus of Etaimo, since it has a different color and it has a different taste than water, that's enough reason for being Mechayev Hafrosha. So our problem right now is, in Source Aleph, we receive the impression that only wine needs tithing, but Temed does not. And here, this source, which is also authored, where you see Rebbe Yehuda's opinion here, he says that Temed is Chayev. So the Gemara explains, Hochi Ka'omar. We should read the first source thusly. And the point of this is that, of course, temed requires being tithed. However, lo nechshedu amei ha'oretz al ha'temed. They're not suspect of not having tithed. because the temet is something of so little significance, they don't feel it worth their while to be skimpy on the tithing, so to speak, and they will go ahead and tithe it, not feeling that they're really profiting by not tithing it. So even though you're dealing with amaratzim, but since what you're buying from them is temed, so there's no reason to, or you're buying vinegar that's whose origin is temed, there's no reason to need to tithe again. Another approach is that the amaratzim are suspect. Now, as far as Rabbi Yehuda is concerned, velo kashya, ha bedarvoka, ha bedeputzini. We'll look at the Rashi in Dibur Maskil, Viboy Seimo Nechshidu, just a few lines down from here. Rashi says, Rabbi Yehuda b'masnisa kamaisa, Rabbi Yehuda in the first source, taimei mishum depoter afilu mimaiser vadai, that you are exempt altogether, even from a certain the need to tithe based on vadai, based on knowing that it had not been tithe, you still are exempt, even though you know it wasn't tithe. Ubetemed de purtzini komar. That's a reference to temed made from purtzini. Shenoyste mayim becharzonim. V'humach mitzu marsich lachar zman. This is where it's made by pouring water over grape seeds, which will ferment, and marsiach is to literally has to foam or bubble after a while. Kiyayin atosis, as is characteristic of wine when it's fermenting. Vainu temed v'les be'elokyua depira, and all that it has is fruit acidity in it, and that's what you are tasting. And therefore, it does not need to be tithed. V'hadikotoni Rabbi Yehuda mechayev bedarvoka. What's that? Where is it that Rabbi Yehuda says the temed or the chometz temed needs to be tithed? Bedarvoka shenoystem b'shmorim mayim v'hu nami temed. That's where you added water to shmorim. Shmorim are the grape lees. In other words, what it seems to me is that a person had pressed untithed grapes, made wine from that, and that he will tithe. And then you have the grape debris, which is in this case the shmorim, and you added water to that, and that also produces temed. Bahu mechayv Rabbi Yehuda requires tithing. Afagav de lomotz el kedei midaso, even though he may have poured in 3 cups of water and now draws 3 cups of liquid. L'fishayayin shel shmorim mu'urav bo u'min hamayim nishar b'shmorim. What happened very simply is there was a liquid exchange. For example, you put 3 cups of water into this, into the grape shmorim, the grape lees. Those shmorim originally had some liquid content, and of the 3 cups of water that you put in and you're drawing now, 3 cups, really, half a cup of the water remains inside the lees, and the half cup of liquid that was in the lees now gets mixed up in the water. So you have, in effect, 2.5 cups of water and a half a cup of the grape liquid that was stored in the lees. Now that requires tithing. So it depends on what the basis of the temed was. If it was darvoka, that's water poured over lees, that requires tithing. If it's purtzini, water poured over grape seeds producing the temed after it ferments, that does not require tithing. And with that, we also resolve the 2 sources involving Shitas Rabbi Yehuda. V'zesum hamitzri, that was one of the items mentioned in the Mishnah. My zesum hamitzri, what is that? So the Gemara will tell us how one makes it. Tana Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef teaches it's tlosa sairi, tlosa kurtami, v'tlosa milcha. A third sairi. Now we dashed underline that because that's of significance for the issue of chametz. Sairi is barley, one of the items that can become chametz. So a third of it is made of barley, a third tlosa kurtami. Rashi gives a French word for that, and a third salt. Rav Papa, he addresses how you make zesum amitzri, but he changes one of the ingredients, mapik sairi umayel chiti. He deletes sairi from list and replaces it with chiti, with wheat. But the same chometz problem exists here as well. The simonech, in order to remember that Rav Yosef is the opinion that holds sairi, remember sisni. Sisni is a vessel, it's the name of a vessel, but for our purposes, the word sisni is made of two S-sounding consonants. So that the name Rav Yosef and the substance sairi have both, Yosef has an S consonant and sairi has an S sounding consonant, and that by just remembering this vessel known as a sisni with its double S consonant sound, you will remember that Rav Yosef is associated with sairi, with the barley. Now we continue in the Zeisuma mystery description. We just had a list of ingredients. Toru luhu, they are soaked together. Fikolu luhu, and then they are roasted. Vitachni luhu, then they are ground up. We're talking about either the sairi or the chiti, are then ground up. Vishosu luhu, and then one will drink it. Midivcha viarat sarta, between Pesach and Shavuos. So that's the season that the Zeisuma Mitzri will have its maximum therapeutic value. De komet marpile uderofi mekametle. If someone is komet, he has constipation, he's constipated, marpile will loosen his system. And if he is the opposite, he has a loose system, it will have the reverse effect, mekametle. However, lechelo lisha ubra sakanta, if a person is ailing from some other ailment or a pregnant woman, this Zeisuma Mitzri could pose a danger. It can cause over looseness of their systems. V'zomon shel tzaboyim v'chulei. What is that? So there are, the Gemara explains, hocha targimu, here in Bovel, it's explained as maya dechivri ditzaboy behu, either liba or laka. Rashi says, Maya de Chivra is May Subin. Subin is bran, so it's if you soak bran in water, you get what's called the liquid, the May Subin, and of course that touches on the Chometz issue. Subin is from the grains, and it's used as a type of dye or varnish, and that we take from the commentary on the side of the Gemara, which says Laka Seva or Odom. It has it's a color of like red skin, and it's used as a varnish or a dye. Hamilom shel tabochim, also an item mentioned in the Mishnah. Pas, it is bread made from tvua shelo havia shlish, from bread made from grains that are less than a third developed. So someone harvested underdeveloped grains and made flour from that and made bread. Shemanicha al pi kedero. This loaf, after it's made, is then placed on the top of a pot of food that's boiling. Veshoeves hazuamon. It absorbs the filth from the food. So it functions as a type of sponge, if you will, that draws the dirt or debris that exists in a pot of boiling food. The colon, again, you have to notice in each one of them the ingredient that ties it into the realm of chometz. So we just saw that. And now the colon shel soifrim. Hocha, well, here we have an aleph and followed by Rav Simi with a beis. So we have two explanations. Hocha, here, Targuma, they explain it as Perura de Ushkafi. This is a glue used by leather makers. Ushkafi also can refer to shoes. Shoes are made of leather, so it's a glue used in shoe or in strap making. And the Rav Simi Michoizno Omar Ze Tipulon Shel Benois Ashirim. This is a depilatory. Tipulon, from the word tofel. Tofel is something that is stuck on to something else. So it's, in fact, a depilatory, a hair removal cosmetic or treatment that the rich women use. It's produced from solas. Solas is a certain type of flour, a type of farina-type flour, as we explained before, hesitating, though, on the translation there. And it's used, as we say, it's mixed with water and then stuck to the skin of women, and it is then pulled off, pulling off all unwanted hairs. And the Gemara also comments, "Shemeshairos oisoi livnos aniyim." Whatever leftover they have, they would give to the women folk who were impoverished. The Gemara asks, "Eini, is that so?" V'ha tana Rabbi Chiya. Rabbi Chiya has a Tanaic source that reflects the list taught in our Mishnah. Our Mishnah had a list of items, and here's a type of mnemonic or simon memory device to help in remembering the contents of the Mishnah. He says, "Arba'a mine medina, u'shlosha mine umanus." If you look in the list of things in the Mishnah, so Rabbi Chiya says four of them reflect countries, and if you look back on Omid Aleph, you can see the Kusach HaBavli, for example, reflected Bavel. The next thing, Modai. The third, Edom. And the fourth, Mitzri. So there are four countries referred to here. And then the balance of the items refer to different occupations. There's Tzaboyim, Tabochim, and Sofrim. Tzaboyim are dyers. Tabochim are people that deal with meats. And Sofrim are people that are scribes. So there are three occupations mentioned. The Gemara points out, "Vi Amris, if you say that kolon shel sofrim is tipulon shel benoy sashirim, it's this cosmetic treatment used by wealthy girls, my mine umanus iko, what's the craft or the occupation that is referred to here?" The first shot that we saw was Pirua de Ushkapi, so it had to do with a craft. The Gemara asks, but how does the first shot help either? The E Amris, if you're going to say Tipun Shalbanos Mulacha Mai Mine Umanasika, if you take the second shot, that of Rav Simi, this cosmetic treatment, where is there any tie into a profession? The Elamai Pirura de Ushkafi. So here the Gemara challenges the Aleph approach. You just got finished saying that the Bay's approach was problematic. Is the Aleph approach any better? So he says, Elamai Pirura de Ushkafi. If you're going to explain that Kolon Shel Sofrim is Pirura de Ushkafi, meaning glue used by shoemakers, Amai Kori Le Hai Kolon Shel Sofrim. Kolon shel ratzonim miboyale. The Mishnah should have called it not the kolon of sofrim, the glue of scribes. It should have been the glue of strap makers, of leather workers. And the Mishnah didn't say that. Omar of Oshaya, li'olam perura d'ushkafi. We can still stick with the aleph pshat of perura d'ushkafi. Ve'amai kori le kolon shel sofrim. So then, why is it called the kolon of scribes? The sofrim nami medapkin bo niaroseim. Sofrim were scribes when they needed to attach different documents. Niaroseim, their papers, their papyrus. When they needed to attach their different documents together, they would use this glue. So it's glue that was primarily used by leather makers, leather workers. However, the Mishnah, in referring to it, it refers to it as the sofrim glue because they also used it. But as far as the Rabbi Chiya source is concerned, we would still have a reference to three types of craftsmen listed in the Mishnah, which strengthens, we call pshat aleph that we gave for kolon shel sofrim, as opposed to the cosmetic explanation that was presented by Rav Simi Michozna. Rabbi Lezer Omer, Af Tachshite Noshim. Rashi says at the bottom line, Tachshit Enoshim Hu Chal Usrak Ubisomim Shitos Betzavrim Lariach Umay Chometz Iko. Okay, the different forms of different cosmetics that are used by women. And Rabbi Eliezer says so that even Tachshit Enoshim falls under the Chometz related prohibition. So the Gemara asks, Tachshit Enoshim Salka Daitoch. What chometz is in those? Tachshit Enoshim, as we explained, as Rashi pointed out, is reference to chal and srak and different spices that women wear for fragrance purposes. Elo emo, rather, in order to understand Rebbe Lezer, we have to understand, he says, af tipule noshim. So that in reading the Mishnah, we had a list of items. The last of the list before Rebbe Lezer was Koilon Shel Soifrim. And then Rebbe Lezer says, Af, not Tachshite, but Tipule Noshim. Now, Tipule Noshim is associated with that which we just saw the depilatory, the hair removal thing, and we understood that in making that, so it was made with solas, with flour was used in its manufacture. Now, at this point, you might ask a question, so then what is the difference between Rebbe Eliezer and the Koilon Shel Soifrim, according to Rav Simi Michoizno, who said it was Tipulon Shel Benos Ashirim? So that, like, Rabbi Simi Mechozno, he was well aware of Rabbi Eliezer in the Mishnah. So according to Rabbi Simi Mechozno, then is the Tanakama and Rabbi Eliezer saying the same thing? So that's a question, and if that perks your curiosity, so we recommend looking at the Tosfos Tipulon, but we won't get into that. So, Rabbi Eliezer says that you're to add to the list Tipule Noshim, the Omer of Yudom Arav, Benois Yisrael, Shigiu, we continue at the top of Mem Gimel Omer Aleph, Shigiu Le Pirkon, Velo Higiu Le Shonim, girls that reached physical puberty prematurely. They didn't reach the age that would be expected. So that it could be embarrassing for a young girl to have body hairs or pubic hairs growing from her, and she will then seek out a way of removing them. So depending on your income level, the depilatory that is used will change. Benos aniyim, toflos oison besid. Poor girls would, toflos, again, it's the depilatory, would use as their depilatory sid, lime. Benos Ashirim Toflos Oson Basolas, and we dashed underline that because this is really what we are referring to in the Mishnah. The Soles based depilatory, which of course is something that leads to Chometz, and Benos Melochim B'Shemen Hamor. Royalty, women of royalty, would use myrrh oil, Shenemar. It says in Megillas Esther, where the young women were sought out to be a replacement queen for Achashverosh, so they were subjected to different cosmetic treatments. And it says in the pasuk Shisha Chadoshim b'Shemen Hamor, my Shemen Hamor. That pasuk means that they were treated 6 months with the Shemen Hamor treatment. What is Shemen Hamor? My Shemen Hamor. Number one, Rav Huna bar Yirmiyo Amar, Satkis. Rashi says, Lo Isparesh. He doesn't have an explanation for what that is. Rashi here doesn't attempt a translation. So, for our purposes, Shemen Hamor in the time of the Gemara was known as Satkis. Number two, Rav Yirmiyo bar Abba Amar, Shemen Zayas Shilohevi Shlish. It's olive oil made from olives that are premature. They haven't grown even a third of their development. Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, An Piknin, there is an item known as An Piknin. It is Shemen Zayis Shelo Hevi Shlish. It's that kind of oil made from premature olives. Veloma sochen oso. Why would one smear himself with that? It would serve as a depilatory, and it would also add a complexion to one's flesh. Ma'adain, Rashi explains that with a French word, but it would have some type of flesh, a positive flesh impact after using it as a type of smear or anointment. Before we conclude today's shiur, let us, of course, remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.